The RTE Rugby Podcast.
And you're very welcome to the RTE Rugby Podcast. Hugh Cal here. Beside me is RTE Rugby editor Wes Liddy. And this week we're joined by former Ireland coach Eddie O'Sullivan as well. And later on we're going to speak to James Cullen to get the view from France ahead of the French game at the Aviva this weekend. Plus Gary Ringrose on starting his first game at the Aviva Stadium in Dublin. And Ireland's Women's Director of Rugby, Anthony Eddy, is going to give us his thoughts ahead of France on Sunday. Plus, of course, the Sevens team flying out to Las Vegas next week. But we have our team, gentlemen. And Eddie, it's good to see you. Good to talk to you in the studio. I mean, Johnny Sexton was the big talking point, I suppose, whether or not he would be named and fit to play. He has been named. Was there ever a decision once he's fit?
Well, I think if you look at the history of it, there's no question Joe Schmidt was going to pick him. I mean, Joe, we could talk all we like about what we do, but Joe Schmidt picks the team and he was always going to bring Johnny back. I suppose the frustrating thing for everybody is we were told weeks ago that he was fit for Scotland, and now the third game of the Champions eventually making an appearance. I think it's worth mentioning as well, it's tough on Paddy Jackson. You know, the guy I think has delivered in this championship. He delivered in South Africa. He got a bit of flack after Scotland. I thought it was very, very harsh. I thought he had a fine game. He had, was it 9 out of 9 of his kicks in Italy?
Yeah.
And known all the time that as soon as Johnny laces up his boots, he gets the shepherd's crook. So
what does that do to him then?
It doesn't help him. And I think you have to give him extra credit for delivering those performances with that in the back of your mind. A young player like him, you know, he's not on a level playing field with Johnny Sexton. Like, Johnny Sexton is number one no matter what way the wind blows. He knows that, everybody knows it, and it's tough going. But I just want to mention, the guy should get credit. He's sitting on the bench next weekend, haven't done really nothing wrong. He delivered on two games and there you go. So, like, Sexton, to be fair as well, if you're going to look at the other side of the coin, he's Schmidt's man. Schmidt knows him. They're locked, you know, mentally on how the game is played. And I think, to be fair, Sexton has delivered coming off injuries before. He doesn't need a big running like maybe a Sean O'Brien or another back row would. It's a fair selection, but I think we should nod the cap to Paddy Jackson.
Okay, well, just Wes, nodding that cap then. Like, if you're Paddy Jackson now, right, you know that you've just gone out and played probably as well as he can do against Italy, as you said, 9 out of 9 place kicks, as Eddie mentioned. And you know now that your best is still not going to be good enough to dislodge a guy who has played virtually no rugby in the last 6 weeks or so.
Yeah, I suppose when you put it that way, it's a fair point. It's a hard task for him. But I mean, I suppose Johnny's been viewed as being so important to the team and such a central figure for so long that it's always going to take, you know, not just being as good or slightly better. It's going to take there being almost no contest for that change to be made when both are available. Now, whether that's right or wrong, you know, that's a matter of opinion. But I mean, I can't really say I'm too surprised and that Johnny is starting. I don't think many people are.
Before the Six Nations started, I mean, Johnny Sexton was here and Paddy Jackson was here, and there was a real worry that if something happened to Sexton where he couldn't be fit,
you know, this is the radio, yeah.
Sorry. Up here and okay. Down here. There was a huge gulf between them. You're dead right, by the way. But there was a huge gulf between them as far as most people were concerned, to the point where we were saying, well, if we have to rely on Jackson for the Six Nations, we actually could be in a lot of bother. So
that's debunked.
It was debunked in South Africa,
yeah,
really,
yeah,
wasn't
it? Debunked. I don't think that was... I think you can say, well, the Six Nations is a different kettle of fish. Let's see. But we have seen, and that myth is debunked. Like, Paddy Jackson has delivered. There has been no fall in his form. And I do go back to the Scotland game. How this word got out that he had a bad game. I went through it, line by line, and he had a fine game. He had a huge... He turned the game in his head with a great try. He set up the winning score for us with a grubber in the corner, which we blew. But that's not his fault. He wasn't throwing the ball into the line-out. So, look...
He became the fall guy nearly, did he? In a certain sense?
No, I don't think you can say that. I think, look, Joe Schmidt is... In Joe Schmidt's mind, Jonathan Sexton is the number one, and it looks like by a country mile still. So you're right, it doesn't matter what Pat Jackson does, he's not going to get in, and that's, there's no surprise there. But the argument has to be made, and they can say what they like about being a level playing field. It's not a level playing field, and it's never been for Jackson or for Sexton, because look at Madigan, not a level playing field there either, because Sexton goes off to France, he gets picked for Ireland, Madigan goes off to France, he doesn't see the inside of Carlton House again. So, you know, there is special rules around Jonathan Sexton. But I think Jackson has proved his worth. I don't think there's the gap that everyone thought there might be.
I mean, Wes, we're talking about an out-half who has played very little rugby, and an out-half that, when he has actually got onto the pitch, has struggled to stay on the field. So, like, this is France we're talking about. France are going to say, lovely, Sexton's back, we are going to hammer him all day long and see how good he is.
The form in that regard, and why wouldn't you? But I mean, look, it would probably be a surprise if he lasted the game, looking at recent evidence. But I suppose, just the counter to it being unfair is, I mean, I suppose, Eddie, in your time, it would have taken something astronomical for maybe a Raj, a Drick, or a Paul to go out of the team as well. There is always going to be pillars of any team, I suppose.
Yeah, but there's guys are going to get close to them. And at the moment, the coach sees the gap there is too big to bridge for Freddie Jackson. The thing about Raj is slightly different, because there was a transition there where, you know, when Raj came into the team, Humphs was the man. And then, like, Raj closed the gap, and for a while it was nip and tuck. I went both ways on him. No matter which way I went, you got criticised, but that's understandable. And then eventually Raj, being the younger player, saw off Humphs, and Humphs finished his career like before Raj did. So there's that transition in it. And to be fair, if you're going to step back and not get emotional about it, maybe we're in that transition. Oh, Jackson's beginning to close the gap. He hasn't closed it yet. And, you know, to be fair again to Sexton, he hasn't struggled coming in off injuries. He has played well coming off injuries. He does need a long lead-in. And it's a big one, because if we lose this on Saturday, the championship's over. So I'm not shocked. And I can see the logic in what Schmidt's doing. I don't think it's a horrendous decision. I think it's based on what he believes is best. And you can see the argument on both sides of it.
Rob Kearney is another name that we were told was doubtful. Obviously, he has ticked the box and he's been named in the starting 15.
Oh, and he was looking at an operation a week ago.
Well, that's so I'm kind of puzzled here. I mean, was it not as serious as they once thought? We were told he'd torn a bicep. We told he'd done a serious enough injury. Now he's fit to play against France and has been less than 9-10 days.
Well, we don't want to get into people are very touchy about their medical prognosis has been questioned, so we'll stay away from that. But it's certainly interesting, the flow of information regarding injuries over the last period of time. I mean, he was practically a banker to miss the rest of the championship at one point, as you say, less than 10 days ago. So yeah, fair play, he's got good recovery powers. Obviously,
is he another pillar of this team, Rob Kearney? I mean, he's been selected when his form has been questionable.
No, I don't. I think that it's a different dynamic for Rob. I think, look, he knew he was lucky to get into the game in Soldier Field. I think, in fairness, it's
and he has performed since then.
Well, that was
fairness.
My point. He got the hard word from George Schmidt. Like, it's all or nothing now, and he did deliver. And I think that's fair. I think if you put it up to a player and he delivers, you have to back him. And I've no problem with that. I think he's played well in the championship. I thought he had a good game in Scotland. He nearly sneaked in for a try. They could have won us the game, you know. No, his form is good. He's hugely experienced, and he's delivered on what Schmidt asked him to do. I have no issues with that at all. I think we all like to think maybe Simon Zeebo back there would have a different strut about him and all that. But look, like, Zeebo's on the field, and I think that he was always going to be in the back three, no matter what. But he might have slipped to full back if Rob didn't make it. But I think Rob's selection is justified.
We're going to hear from Gary Ringrose in just a second, but I just want to get your thoughts on him, Eddie, because this is a big game for him. And you look at that centre partnership. Okay, the French backline, which we'll come to a little bit later on, have been accused of being a bit erratic all over the place, but certainly they seem to be making grounds when it does come off. But you look at the centre partnership of Lamoureux and Ficou, and they are physical enough players, particularly Lamoureux, and we know how difficult he is to tackle. Ringrose is going to have to be defensively sound this weekend.
Oh yeah, I mean, he's going to be tested, and each test is probably going to get more difficult for him. But looking at him in his progression, I think the thing you see about him is that he's very measured in his games. I haven't seen him do that wildly spectacular. I mean, we talked a lot about the try in Italy, and it was a great finish from him in Italy, but I mean, the tackling was just appalling. I mean, you're not going to get away with that in most games, but he got his try. But I don't think that defines him. I think what defines him is his consistency. Like, he's very inexperienced, but if you look at his performances in Test rugby, right through since his first game, his first cap, he's made very, very few errors. And that is what, as a coach, you're looking for. A guy at that age to go into that level, doesn't have to shoot the lights out, but does his job, does it well, doesn't make mistakes. When he gets the ball, he passes when he should pass, he carries what he should carry, he makes the gain line, he doesn't lose it. He makes his tackles. He's ticking all the boxes. I mean, I think the guy will go on and win a ton of caps, and he will turn into a great player. But we have to let the guy develop. And I think so far he's ticking all the boxes. It's a big one. Every test game now is another level. Like, Wales will be another one. And again, if he stays fit, England will be another one. But all you can say is that everything he's been asked to do by the coach, he's done it. And I think the thing that sticks out for me looking at a young player at that level is the calmness about his game. He's not erratic. He's very measured. He does everything well and doesn't make mistakes. And for any coach, that ticks a lot of boxes in terms of selecting a guy, and that's the guy you want on the field in a test game.
Let's hear from him. Guy Ringrose, delighted to be starting his first home international at the Aviva.
Yeah, definitely. I'm used to going to all the home games when I was younger, growing up with my parents and heading in with mates. So it is, as I was describing earlier, a pinch yourself moment, yeah, to being involved in the home game in the Six Nations. It kind of what the competition, just so used to watching as a kid growing up, so it'll just be incredible to be involved in the game at home.
So is there a headache then this week of, do you have enough tickets to go around, or can you detach yourself from that completely, that somebody else worries about the tickets and you can just worry about 10 to 5 Saturday evening, that number 13 jersey and 80 minutes of rugby that lies ahead?
Yeah, exactly, that's the least of my worries. You know, I have my mum at home sorts that all out, so she takes that weight off my shoulders.
to look at the weekend, okay, the championship didn't start the way that anyone would have wanted it to have done. You've got back on track last week against, or 2 weeks ago against Italy. You're still firmly in the mix from a championship perspective, but you as a squad know that there's no margin for error this weekend, that we need to hit the ground running and get ourselves firmly back in the mix.
Yeah, definitely. Everyone's really excited, as I say, to play at home against, in front of a full stadium. So, with the way the first game went, you know, as you said, there is very little margin for error. I think the competition, especially with the bonus points being brought in, it's just so tight, and any chance we get to get any sort of points we'll need to take, and especially with France and how good they've been and how strong they've been, we'll really have to bring our A game if we want to impose ourselves in any way.
And that's the thing about France this weekend, is that they're going into it on a wave of positivity. You know, new coach, new style of rugby, that the positivity seems to surround the French team as well. They don't have to deal with some of the burden that they might have dealt with in previous years.
Yeah, they're just incredibly dangerous, and as you said, playing some lovely rugby, and they've that offload game which is tricky to deal with. An opposition has found it hard defending against, with the individual threats they have, and then that kind of collective offloading game, you know, when they get going, you really need to be switched on and concentrate to hold them out.
But I suppose from an Irish perspective, it's about looking at that 23, looking at the skills that exist within that squad, and making sure that it's our stadium, it's our home fans, the game is played the way we want it to play, that it's about us beating France and not letting France play their game.
Yeah, you're right. I think we analyse them and be as best prepared for their threats as we can, but we gotta get ourselves right, and that is the primary focus, to make sure we're as switched on as possible, and we can be put in the best 80 minutes possible, 1 to 23, and that, as you said, is the priority.
How would you describe the mood around the place this week? Because, you know, obviously it would have been terribly disappointing after the Scotland game. Has the positivity got back in, that just everyone just wants Saturday afternoon to roll around and have another opportunity to wear that jersey and go out and show people what you're capable of doing?
Yeah, just seems to be excitement amongst everyone. The first home game in front of the home crowd, and there's just been a huge build-up, especially with the two away games. Everyone's itching to get back into the Aviva and play in front of the home crowd. So, as you said, Saturday can't come soon enough for all of us.
We spoke after the Canada game, and here we are 3 months on, and it seems like only yesterday that, you know, you wore the jersey for the first time. How big a step up is it, or how have you found the adjustment from even top-class Champions Cup rugby to Test international rugby?
Yeah, well, over the last kind of 3 years, I've been lucky enough to play 2 years of under-20s and two under-20 Six Nations, and then the two Junior World Cups, then a few games with Leinster A, and my first year at senior level with Leinster last year. So it's kind of been gradual steps, and as I said, then, as you said, the making my debut in autumn, which again was a bit of luck with a few injuries here and there, and managed to play in a couple of the games. So it's just been kind of gradually building and building, and then the Six Nations is just that other next step up, and there's that extra bit of pressure when it comes to, you mean, tournament rugby. There's a little bit more on the line, so it's just trying to adapt as best I can to keep up with it.
Yeah, it's Guy Ringrose there speaking to Damien O'Mara earlier on today. The other call that Joe Schmidt made, Eddie, was in the front row, and Jack McGrath back in for Cian Healy. Is that a straightforward decision as far as you're concerned?
Yeah, I think it was. I think he sees Jack McGrath as a number one. I think that's fair too. I'd agree with that. I think Dave Kilcoyne has a bit of a bake if he wants, like, that he's playing great stuff on Munster, and he's been pushed out by the Leinster number two. So, like, yeah, I think Jack McGrath is number one for sure. He's scrummaging is top notch. He's working the line out excellent, and his ball carrying is good, and his work rate's good. You know, I don't see any reason why he wouldn't start there. I back that decision.
Kilcoyne was brilliant again for Munster last week in the Ospreys. Does he have a right to feel a bit aggrieved here.
I think so, yeah. I've been saying it for a good few months now. I don't know. I mean, look, Cian Healy's a proven international. He's a bucket of caps. He's been world class in the past. Has his form been better this season than Kilcoyne's? Not that I've seen.
It's open for debate, certainly.
Yeah.
I mean, every time I've seen
it. But I don't think that call was ever a possibility that was going to happen. 4 years of evidence under this coach has shown us that wasn't going to happen. And everyone has their preferences, and that's his, I guess, you know.
Frustrating, though, by the same token, if you're going out playing well week in, week out, and you know, as you say, that you're still behind.
Every player will back himself. But I think Healy is not back to his barnstorming best by any metric. You know, he's a very good player, and but I think he's not back where he was, and I think Coyne has a case. You know, he's playing out of his skin in Munster. He had the winning try again last weekend.
Yeah.
So, you know, and his ball carrying skills are excellent.
Especially for 20 minutes off the bench, when McGrath's going to start anyway, he could give you a lot coming off
the
bench.
He's done that. He's come off the bench at times and lit things up, you know, because he gets his hands on the ball like five or six times in 10 minutes and wins big collisions, you know. He's that type of player. But look, it seems like Joe Schmidt has made his mind up on Cian Healy, and as this is right, you know, he's closer to the players. He sees more in them than he does in Kilcoyne. That's okay, but it's worth talking about it, because I think Kilcoyne could be feeling a bit aggrieved.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's get the view from France, and James Collin is on the line. Hey, James.
How are you, lads? How are you getting on?
Yeah, good to talk to you. Look, not a bad. Your side did one over on Grenoble there last weekend. Not a bad one to
we
get.
We did, yeah. Unfortunately for all the Irish lads on the Grenoble side, but anyway, we'll take it. We'll take it.
Yeah, what's the mood over there in France this week, James? Just ahead of the match this weekend, is there a sense that actually France, with the weekend's rest that they had, with the performances that they have put in, particularly against England, that they could come here and leave with a win?
Yeah, it's been a bit up and down, I'll be straight. You know, there's been a lot of calls for Bastereau's inclusion and possibly Kamisha to start, but it's just I think they were unlucky against England. I think they played better than maybe everyone was expecting. I thought Picamore was outstanding, especially, and I think they're going to be looking at this game now as maybe the ones that will kick them on and maybe, you know, progress to finish on a good note, you know, with the next three games they're coming up, that they need to start with Ireland, and it's a big game for them. So, you know, you never know what French team. That's going to be the problem for France. I think their game is basically based around the way Toulouse have played for the last few years, that, you know, looking for offloads through the tackles and, you know, big men carrying the ball. And that's what they're looking at probably doing against Ireland. So it'll be a massive test for Ireland defensively.
James,
I think, you know.
James, Eddie O'Sullivan here. Just a question for you.
I
thought that they played really well in Twickenham, even though they lost. But I thought they took a step back in Paris, maybe just getting back into the Stade de France and the atmosphere. But they were looser with the ball and they were sloppy and they won.
Yeah.
But are the French public happier with the win over Scotland or the loss against England? Because I think if they play like they played against England, they could beat Ireland. But if they play like they played against Scotland, they'd probably lose.
It's so fickle, you know, the way it is, Eddie, especially. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, for them, it's about the big games. It'll be about England. And now, with the greatest respect to Scotland, they would have expected to beat Scotland by 30 or 40 points. And maybe, you know, when the French had turned up thinking that, the process goes out the window, which is what Ireland is based around, is the process. So I think this will be their big one. This will be the one where all the heads will be banging against the walls. You know, we're going to win this. We're going to win this. But, like, I just think Ireland's back row especially have enough to be able to deal with the way that they're playing at the moment. And if that's the case, then they're going to struggle, you know. So I think, you know, rightly so, they'd be pleased with the result. But are they pleased with the process? I think they were probably, as you say, probably happier losing against England, because I think a couple of individual errors cost them their big time. You know, Doucet coming on and missing that kick to touch, really. They've had 16 penalties and they've got 16 lineouts and they've got 6 penalties from it. You know, that could have been the turning point for them. But look, I think we'll get their best at the weekend. That's what I would expect from them at this weekend, you know.
James, you mentioned Picamall there a minute ago, and he seems to have been central to everything they've done well so far. Has there been any kind of acknowledgement that, you know, he's always been an excellent player, obviously, but that his form has risen since he left France?
I don't think so, I'd be straight with you. I think they're aware of the fact that he's played better now than he has been over the last couple of years. I think it would be remiss to say that he's playing better, because he's not in Toulouse, but you know, sometimes a fresh challenge, a new perspective on the way things are and a new way of playing can have a massive impact. I think he looks leaner now than he's looked in years. I think he looks like he's in incredible shape, and the amount of work that he's getting through as well is phenomenal. You know, he's carrying, he's tackling, he's turning balls over. I think they'll accept the fact that maybe, you know, that, you know, he's playing a different style now, so maybe it suits him better and his form is better as a result. But, you know, Toulouse is still one of the best teams in Europe, you know, the best clubs in Europe, and that's, you know, I don't think anybody would say that he's playing better now because he's not in Toulouse, you know.
It seems like France, you know, when they played against England, the pressure was almost off them. They were away from home. Then they go back to Paris. They feel like they have to beat Scotland to back up that performance. And as Eddie said, they just didn't look as comfortable or whatever. And it seemed like they were kind of almost stifled by that home pressure.
Yeah, I think, you know, sometimes it's better to play with no pressure. And I think the French especially will try when they're playing without any pressure, because there's no one expecting them to do anything major. You know, they think they probably thought, you know, if we get a bonus point out of the England match, then it's a good result. And then expecting maybe to give Scotland the holding in Paris. But you know, we all know rugby is more mental than anything else. If they're switched on mentally and ready to go, then they're as good as anybody else in the world. But if they're not switched on mentally, then, you know, Scotland are a very good team and they're always going to turn up. So I think maybe, you know, I think Novez will be hammering into them like that. This is our season now, lads. We need to be ready for this, and then we can kick on from here, you know.
Come here, listen, yourself and Paddy and Sean wouldn't go over to Bordeaux and teach Ian Madigan how to settle into France, would you? He doesn't seem too happy there at the moment.
Yeah, it's unfortunate for him, you know. I suppose when you leave, you leave to play, and you know, for him, he hasn't been starting regularly, you know, for his own liking, I suppose. Look, everyone's situation is different. I wouldn't dream of commenting on Ian's position, but no, look, I mean, you know, it's just he moved to play. He's not playing, and that's probably where his head is at right now. You know, Bryce would have been as well off to stay at home, but look, it is what it is. He can't change it. I mean, the only thing now he has to do is put his head down and work harder. You know, so. Yeah. I think that's I suppose that's the old fashioned thing. Put your head down, keep out of trouble, and do as much work as you can, and see where you end up then, you know.
Are you still enjoying it there, Jamesy, and you and the lads?
Love it. No, I mean, life is here now, you know. This is my third year here now, so I'm happy out, you know. Eddie will tell you it's a different way of life down here, but it's just, you either embrace it or you'll go mad. So that's just the way it is. Yeah. You just have to get on with it, you know.
Yeah, so it's good. Brilliant. Look, it's great talking to you as always. Thanks a million for your time. Appreciate it.
Lovely.
Cheers.
No problem.
Thanks, James.
Man,
nice one. James Collin there. Yeah, I mean, it is like the Madigan situation. Obviously, you know, we heard from him yesterday. You do get a sense now that he just wants to come back. He wants to put himself back.
I think an interesting factor there is that James is very happy, obviously, in France, and the guys are happy in Grenoble, in general terms. But you've got non-French coaches. You know, that is a factor. You know, like, he's got Simon Mannix, who's English-speaking, plays, like, runs a club, like, in a structured way, like you would in this part of the world, was in the Munster setup. All those things are factors. Like, Madigan goes into Bordeaux, which is a French club run by a French coach, a very French way. And even if you're a winger or a back row, you can probably deal with that. But if you're a 10, like, there's so much traffic and information going through you all week in training, and then the systems are different, the way you train is different, the video analysis is different. It's a lot to take on. And Jonathan Sexton struggled as well in Racing Metro, even though he had Raj to help him.
Yeah,
you know.
In fairness as well, I mean, James is 34, married, couple of kids. It's different to a guy going on his own at 26 in terms of that settling in process. I mean, if your family are with you, it's going to help
well
on the pitch.
I saw this in Toby Flood when he went to Toulouse first. Mm. Like, he left a very structured game in England and he went into Toulouse and he struggled really, really an awful lot, to the point where his goal kicking left him down and everything when he was his first. But to be fairness, he stuck it out and he's dug in there, and he's probably adjusted to being more French than English. You're not going to change the French in a French club.
You have to adapt.
You have to adapt. And I think Ian was struggling with that and you know, said to himself, I don't know if I can adapt, you know. And again, I think, yeah, the age profile as well says is a factor. But I do think if he had you know, non-fringe coaches around him talking about the type of structures that he's more accustomed to in this part of the world, he might have had it found it an easier transition.
And maybe it doesn't help as well that Rafael Ibanez is under a bit of pressure there at the moment, but that's maybe for another day. Like, the issue of Bastereau, right, and James said that the French public are calling for him to come back into the team. Yeah. Like, that... Bastereau obviously is clearly very talented in certain areas of the game. He's such a direct running centre. He's put on, I think, even more weight in the last 6 months yeah. than he ever has. And I'm just wondering, does Guy Novez, has he any interest in bringing in a guy who is so physical and direct, but yet the way that France are trying to play at the moment doesn't seem to fit into that kind of...
I think he's... Novez is relieved that he got injured. it's a non-decision.
Yeah.
Because the problem for Novez is, like, it's so fickle in France that if Novez left him out this weekend... and they lost in Dublin, like, they're looking for his head on a spike yeah. because he should have picked, you know, Bastereau. So having Bastereau not there at all, like, it's probably a relief because, you know, his midfield, he's trying to build a midfield going forward. He's trying to put guys
and
together.
He's missing his pivotal man, in fairness, in Fofana. I think,
yeah, they're not shrinking violets in the middle of the field.
No, absolutely.
But you know what you're going to get from Bastereau. You're going to get that, you know, north-south, one-dimensional, big carries. And he can be dealt with in the modern game. Guys are just going to go low and chop him, and the next guy's going in and poach him. But, like, the pressure from the media, like, almost they get their way in France. It's huge, and the public buy into it. So, in some ways, Novez is probably, you know, chuckling to himself, God, I dodged a bullet there, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we're going to move on if we can, because the Ireland Director of Women's Rugby, Anthony Eddy, is on the line. And Anthony, look, good to speak to you first of all. It's a busy few days, I suppose, with Las Vegas and the Sevens coming up next week. But first and foremost, I mean, just before we get into the matches themselves over the next 10 days or so, are you happy enough by the way that Ireland have started the Six Nations campaign overall?
Yeah, sure. Look, you know, it's nice to win. That's the most important thing. You know, you could probably say, probably the girls would admit too, that a little bit frustrated sometimes in the way that we've played, but we've managed to win so far, and probably not so much start the games well, but certainly finish the games much better. So obviously we'll be looking for a much better start against the French this weekend.
France have been impressive as well, and it just seems, having been at the last two games, the Irish games, that maybe just passes that they would normally expect to be second nature almost, just having stuck and a couple of things. It's just been rustiness more, it looks like, than anything else. Is that a fair assessment?
Look, probably. I think Tom's been working hard with the girls, and the girls have been working hard themselves on trying to probably play a bit more of an open game, considering, you know, we play our home games on Donnybrook, which is good for more or less any conditions. So we don't want to just be a team that, you know, kicks the ball for territory and puts the ball up the jumper and walls it. So we've worked really hard on their skills, and you know, I think it's coming, and the development of players is certainly heading in the right direction, leading into, you know, our preparation around the World Cup.
And France this weekend look a pretty difficult challenge. I mean, you'd know a lot of the names from the Sevens circuit as well as anything else. The likes of Shannon Izar is there, Marjorie Mayan, and they had a pretty convincing win over Scotland last time out. So it'll be tough.
Yeah, it will be. You know, and obviously they're the defending Six Nations champions as well. So. You know, I've got a very strong forward pack as well, so, you know, that'll certainly challenge us. You know, it's our first home game, and our girls will be looking forward to playing at home and putting in a good performance.
What's the position with regard to, I suppose, selection, and particularly for this weekend? Because straight away, you know, names like Alison Miller, Senny Naupu are not in the starting 15, whereas maybe Irish women's fans might expect them to be part of it. But is there a rotation system going on here, or how does it work?
There is a rotation system to a degree, Hugh. This was always on the cards from day one, really. So, you know, we don't have a lot of depth. So we've looked at the opportunity to provide players with other match time during the Six Nations. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Sané and Alison Miller didn't go to Sydney, so they stayed with the Sevens squad, so they could stay here and play those two Six Nations games. Following Sydney, we're in a position where we could, drop Hannah back into the 15s to be exposed to that level of rugby again, which is fantastic. And then, you know, this week against the French, we've got an opportunity now to provide, Kim Flood, who tasted some Six Nations success last year, and also Louise Galvin, put those back into the 15s team, and, you know, give other players such as Claire McLaughlin and so on an opportunity to start because, you know, a World Cup or any game isn't won by 15 players. We've got to continue to develop the depth of our players.
And is it just about trying to find the right balance as well between, obviously, your commitment to the Sevens programme, which is important, and obviously with the World Cup coming up later this year, giving as much players, as you say, the opportunity to get experience at international level at 15s as well?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, we've a couple of years ago, the RFU made a decision to move the Women's 15s program into the High Performance Department. So we treat it as a high performance program and a professional program. And, you know full well that we can't go into a World Cup relying on just 15 players. We need the depth of a full 28 women's squad if we're going to have success.
And do you feel like, I know there has been a lot of players used by Tom over the November internationals as well, and then equally the friendly against Wales just in the run-up to the Six Nations itself. Like, is there a sense that there is a growing strength and depth, if you like, in this Irish squad now?
Yeah, look, I think there is, absolutely. Yeah, I suppose just the nature of the women's game, you don't get too many opportunities to play at this high level of Test rugby or... and even, you know, international rugby. So we've got to take every opportunity to try and expose what we perceive as potential players to this level as much as we can.
And I know there was a letter recently released, a kind of an open letter to the Irish women's setup, of which obviously you're a major part. But there seems to be a bit of frustration around the performance of the 15s at the moment, and there is a perception from the people who've written this letter that maybe the 7s is being prioritised ahead of 15s. What's your answer to that?
No, that's not the case, I can assure you of that. No team is prioritised any further than the other. So, you know, we've worked hard to try and make this one program. It's a women's rugby program that operates in a professional environment, and there's always going to be players coming in and out of different teams to represent either the 7s or the 15s.
What about, you know, if you just compare the Irish situation with, say, the England setup, Anthony, and, you know, England seem to have an awful lot of contracted players who are able to train full-time. They're, in essence, you know, in every sense of the word, they're professional players. And is there a sense that maybe Ireland just needs to maybe try and bridge that gap, or is that possible even in the short term?
I don't know if it's possible in the short term, Hugh. England have made a decision to do that. It's probably hard to compare ourselves to England when you consider, or even the French, you know, they've got a huge playing base in the women's game to select from. Plenty of the other countries, probably, you know, one of the better teams, Canada and New Zealand, that we've played in November, you know, they haven't gone down that path. But they're utilising, you know, their club competition and also opportunity to further develop players through their sevens programs to develop them into 15s players as well.
Have you noticed a massive difference? I have to say, even, you know, being part of the sevens circuit, I've seen the Irish team when they first re-entered the World Series versus now, and even in Sydney, you know, you qualify for the top eight for the first time with that particular bunch of players. Have you noticed a significant progression in that last kind of 18 months or so?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think the girls have started to develop more confidence, probably feel as if they belong there on the circuit now. Their skills have enormously improved. They've worked extremely hard in that area. And the other requirement to the sevens game is just, you know, the physical demands. So, you know, a lot of them have now got a training age of 2 or 3 years, which has started to pay off.
Yeah, and Las Vegas next week, you must be looking forward to that. And if you can capitalise on, I suppose, the performance levels in Sydney, that would be super.
Yeah, we are. Although we had some success in Sydney, I think the girls walked away after day two a little bit disappointed, knowing that the games were very close, but also knowing that they can compete with, these teams and, you know, France and Russia, who we haven't beaten before, but we've certainly come close to, and, you know, we can compete against most teams on the circuit these days.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, best of luck this weekend, and obviously with Las Vegas as well next week, Anthony, and thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
Great. Pleasure. Thanks, you.
Anthony Eddy there. Okay, lads, we don't have much time left, but just before we finish up, I mean, you'd fear for Italy on Sunday, Eddie, wouldn't you, against England? Like, on the basis of the performance that we saw, this could be another annihilation.
It could well be, and it likely will be, although, you know, sometimes in rugby you get those moments where one team is supposed to annihilate the other and it doesn't materialise because they play with fear. The fear factor can be hugely motivational. And England, you know, expect it to happen and they go out kind of a little bit off, 5%, 10% off, and it doesn't happen. But you got to fear, because there's so many chips on the table for England. If England kick on here, they'll fancy themselves coming to Dublin for another Grand Slam and a world record string of victories. So there's a lot of things pointing in, keeping England pointing in the same direction, the whole lot of them. And you do worry, and, you know, if they take another hiding on the weekend, it just raises all these questions about why are they in the tournament at all.
Yeah, and Johnny Feehan just will not entertain even the prospect of bringing Georgia in at their expense at the
moment. I can see that too, because it's not that practical. I mean, there's no evidence that Georgia would do any better in Italy, and Tbilisi wasn't going to draw that many people on a weekend.
70 million people in Italy, to biggest population in Europe.
Yeah, but I mean, none of them are interested in rugby though.
But I mean, you got to hope. I know they've been there for a number of years now, but I mean, rugby is still a small sport internationally. It's very hard to walk away from the potential
that,
of numbers
having
there.
Having said that, I played with the Eagles. We played the Georgians in Tbilisi, and there was 65,000.
Yeah, but they were all forced to attend the match for fear of imprisonment.
What about any chance that Scotland might do the tournament, and particularly us a favour by taking Wales, do you reckon? No Greg Laidlaw for Scotland, obviously he's a big loss, but George North back for Wales. Is this a Wales win for you, or what do you think?
I think it could go either way, to be honest with you. I suppose both their form have been kind of pretty mixed over the two games so far. Scotland seem to be in a pretty good place. Yeah, I mean, look, I think all things being equal, you'd fancy Wales, but I wouldn't be stunned to see Scotland do it.
I go on a bit of a limb. I think we've given Scotland too much credit. Like,
okay,
we should have beaten Scotland out the gate, except the scoreboard beat us. You know, I think France played badly against them and still won. I have a feeling Wales are coming, you know. And
like, provided Rob Howley doesn't take off Moriarty and Webb with 25 minutes to go.
Yeah, that's a fair point. But I just think Wales still sniff a championship here. They still sniff a championship, and they're hoping we can do them a favour maybe against England. But and they aren't that type of team in the championship. I just wouldn't write Wales off. I think they have the edge on Scotland. Now, it might be proved wrong. The Scotland resurgence might be what everyone's saying, but I can't see it at the moment.
Okay, we'll leave it there, lads. We're out of time. My thanks to Eddie and to Wes and to James, of course, and Anthony Eddie as well. We're back this time next week, where hopefully we'll be discussing another Irish win against the French.